My name is Steve, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the LivaNova Investor Call regarding CMS Proposed Decision Memo. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Matthew Dodds, Senior Vice President, Corporate Development, please go ahead.
Thank you, Steve, and welcome to our conference call and webcast discussing the CMS Proposed Decision Memo regarding its national coverage determination for the LivaNova Vagus Nerve Stimulation Therapy System for treatment-resistant depression. Joining me on today's call are Jamie McDonald, our Chief Executive Officer, Thad Huston, our Chief Financial Officer, Brian Olin, our Senior Vice President, Clinical Quality and Regulatory Affairs, and Melissa Farina, our Vice President of Investor Relations. Before I begin, I would like to remind you that the discussions during this call will include forward-looking statements. Factors that could cause actual results to differ materially are discussed in the company's most recent filings with the SEC, and we do not undertake to update any forward-looking statement. We issued a press release earlier this morning, and you can find it posted in the Investor Relations section of our website under News and Events. With that, I will now turn the call over to Damien.
Thanks, Matt. Well, thanks for joining us on this call with short notice. We expect to conclude this call in about 30 minutes, and after formal comments, we'll open it up for Q&A. We were pleasantly surprised last night to receive early notification from CMS. As you know, for some years, we had hoped to find a pathway forward for Medicare coverage of VNS therapy for treatment-resistant depression. Yesterday, CMS published a proposed decision memo outlining such a path. Many of you, I know, have already read this memo, but the highlights are: patients' treatment will be covered if they participate in a CMS-approved, double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trial with a follow-up duration of at least 1 year. CMS may approve an extension of the study to a prospective longitudinal study when the trial has completed enrollment and there are positive interim primary endpoints. Key outcomes of the study include remission, quality of life, psychiatric status, and changes in suicidality. Patient eligibility criteria are largely consistent with FDA-approved indications. And finally, in addition to coverage under the trial, battery replacements for currently implanted Medicare beneficiaries would also be covered. As you might suspect, we too have just received this memo, and the team has worked overnight to understand the implications. We are pleased with CMS's willingness to reconsider coverage of this important therapy for patients with depression. It is rare that CMS revisits a non-coverage decision. On behalf of Medicare beneficiaries, we appreciate CMS's effort in reviewing the evidence and developing this process to provide access for this underserved population. Over the next 30 days, there will be a public comment period, during which time patients, clinicians, and other interested parties will have the opportunity to weigh in. Additionally, during this period, we will have discussions with CMS to further understand details in its proposed decision memo and how to implement them. The next milestone will be on or before February 17, 2019, when the final decision memo will be posted. There is still a lot of work that we need to do, and there are a number of unanswered questions that we will seek to resolve during this period. And certainly, any implementation plans will be dependent on further discussions with CMS and the final decision memo. And with that, Steve, let's open the lines up for a brief Q&A.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Rick Wise with Stifel. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Damien. Congratulations on the good news, and my reaction, you know, I think was similar to yours, your initial reaction. I mean, it's great that the door is open. It seems to me like it's further open. But can you talk to us about some of your expectations in this period ahead? You know, I'm sure that there is going to be a discussion, but maybe two key questions here. What do you expect during this public comment period? And what are you going to be, to the extent that you can share, what are you going to be asking of CMS in terms of further clarifying the trial design, the number of patients, and maybe the potential for some interim label or registry? I'm fumbling a little bit because I don't know what's possible, but maybe you can help frame some of that for us.
Yeah, look, we're going to do a little bit of a round robin here with the answers, Rick, but thanks for getting on the call on short notice too. Look, I think the big thing is, you know, this has been a large topic, especially for this underserved population. There are a large number of key opinion leaders, patient groups, and patients that have been unsure about how to get access to this therapy. So we expect this, you know, there are going to be a lot of topics that people want to weigh in on during this public comment period. And, you know, those things will also form up what we use to have discussions with CMS. But I think, you know, Brian, you want to jump in here. There are some things that you find valuable to discuss.
No, I think we'll spend time talking a little bit about some of the nuances and how we execute. The memo is clear in some areas and less clear in others, and really trying to understand what CMS means on a number of topics. Talking a little bit about some of the primary outcomes, what makes a patient eligible for the study, and general aspects around how you would take what's in this memo and really turn it into a solid study protocol that we can execute and make sure we're successful on.
And just to take that another step further, if I could, Damien, what do you think is, help us think about the trial. I mean, what do you think is a reasonable number of patients, and how long will it take to enroll, and, how many centers would you contemplate? Any incremental color there? And, is it going to take you 2 years to do this? I have one last question. I'll say it now and let others ask, but last, it seems to me there is a positive here in the sense that conducting a trial that's reimbursed and paying for replacement volume is incremental revenue for LivaNova over and above what at least we've contemplated. Is that the right way to think of it? How would you have us think about it? Those two things. Thanks.
That's great. I'll go with the second bit first and then come back to Brian on the trial design. Look, let's go back to what we said to a lot of you over the last, 6 or 8 months. Anything that wasn't a no, in our opinion, is positive. You know, we've been at this for more than a decade to try and get access and coverage for these patient sets, and we're excited about that. So, in our opinion, and definitively, this is a positive for us. And you probably want to talk about the trial design, and I'll come back on revenue.
Sure. So I think that's what you alluded to with regards to number of patients, timelines, and centers, and so forth. That's really going to be the topic of the discussions that we have with CMS over the next 30, 60 days or so, and really seeking to understand what they mean in the context of the primary outcomes, how we translate that into a statistical measure, and that's what's going to really drive the design, the number of patients. And then, of course, that will actually drive the number of centers that we look at and the timelines from there.
So in terms of revenue, look, you know, we expect that sometime in the second half, we'd expect to be able to start enrolling. And as you also noted, there is a, coverage for people who require a battery replacement. And again, there were roughly 3,000 patients that were implanted during the previous coverage decision, and of those 3,000, there was a proportion who were Medicare beneficiaries. So some proportion of those 3,000 would be eligible for replacement. So you have a trial that's covered by CMS, so the patients in the trial would be covered and paid for, as well as some replacement cycle. But we don't expect until really second half.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Rick.
And your next question comes from Raj Denhoy with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. First of all, congratulations. A couple questions. You know, I'm curious on your reading of the proposal that CMS put forward in terms of being able to look at interim results from the study, you know, before you move to this sort of longitudinal or registry portion of the study. Do you interpret that to mean that you don't need to complete the complete follow-up of the study, publish the study, present it before you can actually move to more of a registry or fuller access to the technology?
Yeah, I think that's an opportunity. I think that that's something that we want to explore with CMS, exactly what that means. Looking at, you know, how we can monitor it, what data we're going to be looking at, and what type of signals we need to have that would allow us to transition over. As we're looking at using some adaptive design techniques that might lend themselves very nicely to this, and potentially we can work that into discussions that we have.
Okay. You know, my second question on the trial is, you know, there was a lot of talk kind of running into this about the sort of ethics and feasibility of a randomized trial, given the data that we have, the Aronson study, and, you know, all the data that's been collected over the last 10 years, and also just really the practicality of a sort of sham-controlled or kind of randomized arm, you know, given some of the side effects of VNS therapy. You know, is there anything you can offer in terms of your views on that? You know, do you think that this is actually a feasible and ethical study to run, given everything that we know?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, first I think that that's going to form a lot of the comments that you'll see over this 30-day comment period, people opining on, you know, the ethics of it and the practicality of it, given the evidence that's out there. I think having said that, we have had some discussions with IRBs in the past few years. And, you know, while they aren't recent discussions, they have indicated that, you know, that this is definitely doable if we put the right controls into place based on the current lack of access for patients for this type of therapy.
Okay. You know, my last question really maybe, Damien, for you, you know, as you're now, you know, sort of embarking on this, you know, this journey here with VNS in depression, you know, what do you think about in terms of spending, you know, building out a business now? You know, is it now time to start doing that, or do you think you'll wait for the trial design to really start spending? You know, how should we think about that for you over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll work through the trial design. I mean, clearly that's the first hurdle, right? So we'll staff up, as you would expect, you know, for a full clinical study, including, you know, field clinical engineers to support the dosing, we'll, you know, program managers, clinical monitors, data management, statisticians. Despite Brian being an expert PhD in statistics, we'll probably need to support him a little bit. So you know, I think the first stage is really around the clinical trial. You know, going into full-blown commercialization is not something that we'd need to do right out of the gate based on this. And now, having said that, what we get as a read on the replacement cycle will probably inform us on whether we need to staff up, you know, to support that as well.
And do you just have a rough gauge in terms of spending for you next year and the year after, or is it too early to know?
Not yet. Again, you know, as with all of you, we got this memo, you know, in London time at about 9:35 last night. So, but we, as I said, the first burst of energy will be around staffing up for the clinical.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Cheers, Raj.
Your next question comes from Matthew O'Brien with Piper Jaffray. Please go ahead.
Good morning / afternoon. Thanks for taking the questions. For starters, you know, Damien, I think, and I know it's tough for you, we're all trying to get a sense for the near-term revenue opportunity, given that, you know, the broader, you know, push on the coverage side has been pushed out a little bit here. So just to confirm, you know, when the patient gets the device on the control side of the study, you're going to get paid for that implantation, and then they'll turn it on at the end, and then you also get paid for the patients that are actually in the study arm. Is that accurate?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, and is there a size that they could cap the number of patients at? I mean, could you do 500, you know, patients in a year, or 1,000? Is that possible?
I think we'll work through them with CMS on the appropriate design for this, and that's the design, the effect size that we want to estimate. That's all really what's going to be driving the study size for this. So we'll work through that over the coming days and weeks.
Okay, but the Aronson study, is that a decent proxy?
I think it's too early to tell. We've got to work through with the on the details on what the different remission criteria are to really understand, make sure that we understand what CMS is looking for that and how those get calculated. That's really going to drive what the sample sizes are.
Okay, super helpful.
Sorry, Matt. Go.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know a good proxy. If you do want to take a look at it, we do think it's going to be in excess of 500 patients or so.
Okay, super helpful. Replacement side, 3,000 patients out there, and I know you're going to do the trial side first. But how easy is it to get access to those patients in your view? And you don't have a sales force there yet. How easy would it be to start seeing some significant revenue from that side of this equation?
Well, these are, so it's a subset of the 3,000 that were Medicare beneficiaries. There is a large group of them that we know where they are because we had the follow-up related to the registry. Some people dropped off our radar screen, but I think again as we go back to the centers that we previously engaged with and make them aware that this is a possibility. Some of you have heard Professor Aronson talk about, patients that are getting to end of life. I think that the main centers know where these patients are, and we would, of course, be supporting any demand that they have.
Okay, and then last one for me, that's super helpful. Damien, appreciate that. Can you talk a little bit about the RESTORE study that you have ongoing and how that will be incorporated in your discussions with CMS, and then the Duke registry, is that ready to go kind of right off the bat?
So the Restore Life registry, I think the way to think about that is that's more likely to play a role as we start thinking about the back half of the study as when we are successful and we start to get continued access. That type of longitudinal study then is a great way to roll in, continue to collect data, and answer a lot of the questions that they're posing here. So,
and that was always the intention of setting up the Restore Life registry, was to be able to do that longitudinal work. Yeah.
Got it. Thanks so much.
Cheers, Matt. Thank you. Thanks for getting on.
And your next question comes from Mike Matson with Needham & Company. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I guess I just want to go back to the longitudinal trial portion of this. Am I right to sort of, based on what you know right now, interpret that as almost a registry effectively, that would be pretty open-ended in terms of the number of patients you can enroll if you get to that point?
Yeah, I think that's really a good way to think about it. Again, go back to what the last caller just asked. I mean, you're really looking at providing continued access to these patients while you're continuing to collect evidence and answer these types of questions. And I think it does continue to be sort of an open-ended at this, to the best of our knowledge right now.
Okay, and I noticed that in the proposal, CMS used trials kind of plural in multiple locations. So, Is it possible that there could be more than one trial? I mean, you guys are going to set up one, but could physicians go out and kind of set up their own trials? I mean, CMS is paying for the procedure, so.
It's hard to say at this point. I mean, I think for us, again, I think that clearly my reading of it right now is it's laid out is that there's an RCT with this continued access program that's sort of a registry-like type of situation. Okay. Anything else that's in there?
So our read of trials is it's those two components.
Okay, got it. All right, and then, if the randomized controlled trial basically shows VNS is safe and effective for TRD, I mean, it seems to me that CMS would have no choice but to end up covering it and really opening it up to everyone that is a candidate. I mean, is that... am I missing anything there? Is that how you're thinking about it?
Well, again, you know, this is early. I mean, the big step for us is that this was not a no. You know, the N was not non-coverage. So, you know, we're just pleased that we're in a position that is much more positive than it has been for a decade. You know, let's first nail down one step at a time. Let's nail down the trial. You know, what happens next? And we're very confident that we can achieve, you know, the things that they're requiring of us. You know, let's get through that first. But I think, you know, a positive trial result would be a very positive outcome. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Cheers.
And your next question comes from Scott Bardo with Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. So, first question, please. Can you just remind us of the clinical data that you had in your first pivotal trial and the Aronson study as to when we start to see some degree of separation according to your previous studies? I guess the nature of the question is, in your mind, is it realistic that you see a separation, a statistical improvement after 12 months, given the relatively longer duration effects of VNS? So perhaps if you can comment a little bit about how realistic that endpoint is for an overwhelming positive outcome. And just following on from that, in your mind, if you do see some signals of interim positives, I don't know exactly what that means at this point. I'm sure you don't either. But if you do transition into a longitudinal study, does that reduce the likelihood of full national coverage, in your opinion? Thank you.
So I think the answer is, you know, first question was, is 12 months enough? And I think the answer there is yes. I mean, I think, you know, we've learned a lot over the past 20 years, and it's been 20 years since the original IDE started, about the effects of VNS and the timing associated with that and dosing. And we do feel pretty comfortable that 12 months is sufficient to do that. With kind of coming back why we feel that and reviewing some of the data that you discussed, you know, when we go back and take a look at the randomized controlled trial, the DO2 study, and also the D21 study, which was a post-approval trial, you know, we were starting to see little peaks of separation right around that 12-week time frame for the different arms, and we just didn't let it go long enough, and I think that's the biggest thing that we've learned. So I think making sure that we have good controls in place during that blinding period and making sure dosing's right and letting it ride for that 12 months, that's really is going to be what drives success in this study. And I think we feel pretty good about that time frame.
So the interim positive. Look, if it is an interim positive, you know, and we do segue into the longitudinal, that in our opinion is a positive. I mean, I think with some of you we've discussed the fact that there are other therapies that have existed, you know, extremely well on a coverage with evidence decision and have, you know, large patient populations that are getting access to the therapy. You know, of course, if we do get an overwhelmingly positive outcome, we would like to enter discussions with CMS for a national coverage decision. But both pathways for us, again, represent, in our opinion, a win.
Understood. Thank you. I just wonder if you could clarify, to the best of your understanding, is it that CMS will look to meet the cost coverage for the device or the whole procedure and some of the auxiliary costs, or will there be a degree of cost burden that you have to stomach as a result of this trial also?
Yeah, our understanding is that it's going to be the device, the procedure, and then the routine care associated with the device as well. So that'll cover a pretty good chunk of cost right there.
Very good. And last one from me, please. And I know this is probably a little bit difficult on the spot, but I guess, you know, when you originally started implanting these devices 10 years ago, most of those patients that would have received implants probably have depleted batteries by now. So I don't know if you have any sense of how many of those 3,000 patients are still on active therapy and therefore eligible candidates for replacement batteries over time.
We do have some sense of that. We're required by FDA to track these devices and get implant warranty cards. So we have a pretty good sense of who the patients are, where they are between that and other data that we have. We also keep pretty good track in many cases of the programming parameters that they use, and those are the things that really drive the battery depletion. So I think between those, we can start to triangulate and understand what patients are out there and available and would be benefit from a battery replacement.
Okay, thanks very much, guys, for taking the questions.
Cheers, Scott. Again, thanks for getting on short notice. I know you're on the road at the moment, so we really appreciate it. Thanks.
Again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And your next question comes from Jason Mills with Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Oh, thanks. Hi, Damien. Sorry about the background noise. I'm traveling as well. Good morning. So a lot of great questions have been asked already. I wanted to follow up on a few. I'm just curious what sort of movement you would like to see between now and February of next year in terms of the prerequisites laid out in this memorandum by CMS. Is there anything with respect to the follow-up time period? I heard you guys say that 12 months you're confident in, but that's a little longer follow-up period than what we've seen in the past with these studies, and whether or not you can make a winning argument to perhaps reduce that. Is that an area of focus for you, or just any other areas with respect to what you see in this memorandum relative to what you hope to end up with in terms of a trial design?
I think a lot of it's really working through with them to get a better understanding of when they talk about some of the primary outcomes. Making sure that we're clear what those are, how those are calculated. You know, really getting down to brass tacks on that. Making sure that we are understanding the what their intent is around the control, for example. Is that a low dose? Is that completely off? Making sure that operationally, what does it mean to transition? What does success look like? And then what does it mean to transition into that continued access registry? Those will be some of the really key questions that we work through with them to make sure that we understand to get so that we can nail that coming out of the decision period.
And I think, you know, again, Jason, we expect a lot of people to weigh in here. You know, there are people who have been very close to this for a long time, and you know, not only the patients but also the clinicians and the patient groups. So we expect them to weigh in on these sorts of things too to get clarity about what it means.
And I think coming back to your last question, one of your comments about the 12 months. I think we're comfortable with that. Again, our goal here is to make sure that we design a trial to succeed. And I think one of the other callers was asking about, you know, is that a sufficient amount of time? And it is, and I think that's probably the right direction. So I think that's not an area that we have a lot of questions about with respect to the memo.
Okay, that's helpful. I guess you probably don't want to front-run these comments from docs a whole lot, but I'm sure you also, Damien, have some expectations or anticipate what some in your camp or in the camp of VNS for TRD may ask for within the comment period or how they may respond. Is there any way you could share some of your expectations with respect to how you expect some of the KOLs that you know very well to respond during this comment period? And I had just one more follow-up after that.
Yeah, sure. Well, look, you know, I think, you know, we had really extensive comments in the previous round. I hope all of those parties and everyone else who's interested weighs in. I mean, this is the furthest we've gone in over a decade, and this is prime time. And, you know, I genuinely believe CMS wants everyone to have a voice. It seems to us, right through this whole process, the ARC review, the MedCAC study, the discussions we had with them, and even, I tell you, even in this considered response that they published yesterday, signals to us that they are genuinely interested in a dialogue. So I hope everyone who's got an opinion weighs in.
That's helpful. And then just lastly, this question admittedly puts the cart a bit before the horse, but please humor me for a second, just with respect to to how this rolls out, because obviously what we're trying on this side of the call to do partly is to lay out a process over which you get a full coverage. And frankly, I think you deserve a lot of credit for taking the long-term view here. Wall Street, however, to some extent, has taken somewhat of a view on how this could impact your stock. And some of that obviously came into the stock after the national coverage decision was opened in a positive way. But as we try to lay out the building blocks to a full coverage, I'm having a hard time trying to get my arms around the timing of how long it'll take to enroll. So if you're starting this trial in the second half of the year, understanding you don't have a clear picture of how many patients you're going to need, but let's say it's around 500, once you nail the trial design down and you start and you get IRB approvals, how long do you think it'll take to enroll, say, a 500-patient study if, in fact, the design of the trial is kind of, you know, like you think it will be based on this memorandum? I'm just trying to get a sense for that, because as I build the building blocks, it looks like maybe a late 2021, 2022 type of decision memorandum on the part of CMS. Maybe comment on whether or not I'm way off there.
Yeah, first of all, you know, I think there's a few things. You know, it's not just full coverage that is the outcome here. You know, even a continuating trial with this extension, the longitudinal, that provides access under the coverage with evidence, as I said, is a win for us. Secondly, and, you know, I'll come back to some of the important things here, there's an enormous patient set that have a large unmet need, and, you know, there's lots of numbers that have been bandied about, but, you know, the number of patients that this affects is in the millions. Even patients that are post other therapies are in the hundreds of thousands. You know, you could expect we would be very active in making this public. And you know, I think we've spoken briefly about some of the work we're doing with the microburst study for epilepsy. Our early work there on using social media to recruit patients has been very positive. And increasingly so. And so we would look at using those competencies that we've built around epilepsy to really extend into this space and drive very aggressive patient enrollment.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too, Jason. Cheers. Thank you.
There are no further questions. I will now turn the call back over to Davian McDonald for closing remarks.
Well, look, again, everyone, it was very short notice. We appreciate so many people getting on the call. Thank you for joining us. And as Jason said, happy Thanksgiving. I hope whoever you are, wherever you are, you're celebrating time with your family and friends. And we look forward to our next call with you. All right, good afternoon and good morning. Cheers.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.